Thanks for listening to the Wellspring Church Podcast.
Good morning. Woo! You guys can take a seat. Thank you for worshiping with us this morning. Thank you to our band. I love that song, so it's a great way to just bring us into what we're going to talk about today and God's goodness. But if you don't know me, my name is April Colquitt. I'm a children's pastor here at Wellspring and also serve on our communications team. And so I'm so excited for what we are going to talk about here today. How many of you like to read? Who are my readers? Good, you're my people. I love to read. I love to read good stories, if it's a mystery or if it's a thriller or just a great novel, whatever it is. I love books. And sometimes I pick up a book to read to learn, because that's important too sometimes. I will pick up books on, my daughter will tell you, I pick up books on parenting all the time, or about family, or just lots of different things. Books that you would find in like the self-help section if you still shop at a bookstore, which is just the most cringy title for a section in the bookstore, isn't it? Self-help section. I hate that. I wish that we could just change it to somebody please help me section, because that's really what it is. If we could help ourselves, we wouldn't be there in the first place, right? So we go to somebody else to help us figure things out, to figure out life. But that's why it's great that we can just order books on Amazon these days. We don't have to go to those sections in the bookstore. But I love to read to learn. And so sometimes if you're like me, you might read something like that and you get really excited about it for a while. You are so excited about all these things that you're learning, and you talk to people about it, and you have 10 conversations about it, and you love that book so much, and it's the greatest, greatest thing, and then in a few weeks, you put that book on the shelf, and you forget all about it, right? If you are like me, and I'm being really honest with you, self-help books, while they are great, don't really change my life that much. And it's not because the content's not great, but it's because I'm not super disciplined at implementing the changes that are suggested in the book. I'm just being real, right? I mean, I can pass that book on to other people. I can talk about it all I want to. But if I don't implement the changes that are being made in that book, that are being talked about in that book, nothing in my life is going to change until now. Because last week, we started a series called Starting Now. And what happened is in December, I picked up a book that I started reading, and it was so good. It was a great, great book, and it was one of those books that I talked about, but it could have easily gone on my shelf, and I would have forgotten about it by the first week in January if it hadn't been for this sermon series that we started last week called Starting Now. See, our staff, we write and we prepare messages and plan services 3 weeks in advance. So in the middle of December, when I was reading this book, our staff was reading the first week's message for this series that Trey wrote. If you were here last week, you know what he taught us, and it is this. He challenged us all to make this decision. Starting now, what I learn will change how I live. So it just so happened that while I was reading this amazing book that could and would change my life if I would do what it said, we were learning this, that starting now, what I learn will change how I live. And so you might be like me, because it's the beginning of a new year. Maybe you are reading something right now, or you are on some type of learning platform where what you are learning could change your life. And if you are like me, this is a pretty big nudge not to waste what you're learning, but to make it happen in your life by taking some steps, by making some marked changes. And so if you weren't here last week, I really encourage you to go back and listen to Trey's message from week one. You can watch it on our Wellspring app, or you can watch it on YouTube or online. But Trey reminded us, or he kind of pointed out something. He said that oftentimes we prioritize knowledge over application. We tend to think it's about what we know, but what we know doesn't matter unless we do something with that knowledge, unless we apply it to our life. And he took us to Matthew chapter 7, where Jesus says, anyone who obeys my teaching but doesn't do what it says is foolish. He's like a man who builds his house on the sand. When the rain and the winds come, the house is destroyed. And I don't want to be foolish. I don't want my house to be destroyed. I want to get better at applying what I know. And so after I read that message and knowing I was going to be teaching today, I began to pray about what God would have me share. And I'm going to take a step with you right here today to share with you what I am currently learning, because if I tell you about it today, I will be accountable to implementing it in my life. If I stand here and I tell you about it in front of all of these people, then I will have to make some marked changes in my life. But more importantly than that, I really think that what I'm learning can help you too. See, the book that I started reading last month is called Find Your People. It's by an author named Jenny Allen. It's a fantastic book. I already told you that part. But what it's really about is how to make friends. It's how to make friends. It sounds like a book for first graders, doesn't it? It sounds like content that we would be teaching our very young children. But isn't it true that as adults, nobody really ever teaches us how to make friends? Making friends as adults is difficult. It's not easy. When we are children, we're playing outside and we're on the playground and we're doing activities. But as we become grown-ups and we enter adulthood, we are busy. We have real responsibilities. And so friendship falls pretty far down on the list when we have full-time jobs and families to take care of, and when we have homes to take care of, and when we have pets to take to the vet, and when we have appointments, and we have all these other things. We don't really know how to prioritize friendship. And so it falls down on the list. Sometimes we've had great friends, but as we close one chapter of our life and we open another one, we move away from those good friends, or they move away from us. And doing long-distance friendship is hard too. And going to a new community and making new friends isn't easy. It's hard to make new connections in a new place. Maybe you've had great friends, or maybe you've tried to make friends, but it just didn't work out. Or you got hurt, or you felt rejected. Friendship as adults is hard. It is not easy. And so today, I want us to kind of talk about this topic together, about how to make friends, because as we know, it's not easy. But do you know that over the course of generations, for thousands of years, communities functioned in smaller groups? Think about this with me for just a minute. For a long, long time, people depended on each other for success and for survival. They had to hunt together, they made meals together. They helped take care of children together. They shared resources. Sometimes they even shared living spaces. But then as society and culture began to progress with the Industrial Revolution and then later the introduction of technology, our lives became more and more isolated. And now we barely have to depend on each other for anything. I have what I need in my house to make food and to wash clothes. I have my own vehicle. If I want to order a pizza, I don't even have to call somebody on the phone. I can just do it online, and they will drop it off at my door, and I never even have to see their face. That's how we do life now. We run to the grocery store, and somebody loads our groceries in the back of our car, and we don't even have to make a connection with them at all if we don't want to. And I'm not suggesting, please hear me, I am not suggesting that we build a commune and we all move in together. That sounds horrifying to me. Some of you, that probably sounds fun. For me, that does not sound fun. But what I am suggesting is that we could learn from past people who chose community and connection over isolation. Because our world has changed, which means that the way that we make connections with people has also changed. Do you know that current research says that 3 in 5 people in America report being chronically lonely? 3 in 5. That's 60% of people. Now, if you're not one of those 3 right now, look around you, because statistically speaking, 1 of the 5 people sitting closest to you right now would say that they are chronically lonely. Scientists are saying that loneliness is as bad for our health as obesity and lack of exercise and smoking. It is directly linked to the rise in anxiety and depression and even suicide that we all hear about every day now. It's loneliness, and it is not supposed to be this way. It's not. Loneliness is making people sick because it is the very opposite of how we are created to live. Actually, we are created for connection. We are designed for deep, meaningful relationships and friendships with people. We long for that because it's how we are created. And it's not just for those of us who would consider ourselves extroverts. I'm not an extrovert, so I'm not talking about myself. But being created for connection is not just for some part of the population. It's for all of us. We are designed and created for special, meaningful relationships, not just with our pets and emotional support animals. I'm not knocking it. But we need more than that. We need people. We need people. Do you know from the very beginning, for all eternity, God has existed in relationship? God exists in a relationship known as the Trinity. The Father, the Son, who's Jesus, and the Holy Spirit. Those three function as one. That means that they support each other, they help each other, and they promote each other. And from the very beginning, the Trinity was working in relationship to create mankind. In Genesis 1, this is what we're told. God said, let us make mankind in our image, in our likeness. Clearly, God was in partnership, in relationship with the Trinity when he made us, and then he made us to be like him, to be relational. So we are created from relationship for relationship. From relationship for relationship by our Creator who is relational. And it's not just for some, it is for mankind. That means all of us, all humans, every single one of us created for relationship. So when you crave meaningful friendship, you're not being needy. You're not being childish. That is your divine nature. It is in your DNA, sewn into the DNA by your Creator to need people in your life. So you shouldn't feel like that's wrong. You shouldn't feel weird about it. You shouldn't feel needy or guilty. It is your divine nature to need people. We are created for connection. And if you've been in church for a long time, or if you've been a Christian following Jesus for a while, this is the part where you're going, yeah, I already know that. Duh. We're created for friendship and connection. A lot of us already know that. This is not brand new information. And if you've been around Wellspring for a while, we even have a core value that is built on this truth. We say it like this: circles are better than rows. You might have heard us say this. This is one of our core values built on the truth that we are created for connection by our Creator, because we believe that when you come into a community of faith like this, that your life is going to be better, not by sitting in a row in here on Sundays, but by being in a circle, in a smaller group of people who know you, who know your name, who know some things about you, who pray for you, who support you, who cry with you, who celebrate with you when life is good, and who help you along the way. That is what is best for our personal lives and for our faith to grow. That's what we believe. And the thing is, I've never had a conversation with someone here at Wellspring who does not understand why circles are better than rows is one of our core values. This one resonates with everyone. For the most part, no one has ever said, why is that your core value? What they more likely want to know is, great, where is my circle? Point me in the direction of my circle. We want to know, everybody wants to know, not why do I need a circle, but how do I find my circle? Because making friends as adults is hard. Making friends as adults is hard. We know we need a circle, but we're not sure how to find it. Sometimes I think what we're doing is we are waiting. We're just like looking at the sky, hoping that the cast of friends will start raining down from the clouds. Wouldn't that be awesome? Some funny friends like Joey and Chandler, or a quirky friend like Phoebe, until we have this collection of friends who all love each other and hang out together for the rest of our lives. Wouldn't that be cool? Some of you want to know, how do I find my circle? And you're waiting on us as your staff to point you in the right direction, or to better yet, give you the address of your 5 to 10 new best friends. But if we really want to know how to find our circle, if we really want to have the kind of deep, meaningful friendships and connections that we are all designed for, then doesn't it make sense for us to look to God's model of friendship, which is Jesus? Jesus is a great friend. He is the perfect friend. So if we want to answer this question, how do I find my circle? Then it makes sense for us to look to the model of Jesus to know how to make great friends, how to find our friends, how to find our circle. And so for the next few minutes, this is what I want us to do together. I want us to look at how we can find our circle by looking to the person of Jesus. You know, Jesus, if you read through the Gospels, not only was he a great friend, but he was a great initiator. He took notice of people and he struck up conversations with people. He went out of his way to connect with people. And he had this group of guys, these 12 guys who were his disciples or his apostles, and they were his friends. That was his circle. They traveled with him and they taught with him and they served alongside him. They learned from him, but that was Jesus's friends. And the thing about those disciples that we sometimes forget is that they did not fill out a job application or audition for the role as disciple. Jesus went looking for them. He went and found them. In Luke chapter 5, Jesus is walking along the beach, and a crowd of people have gathered and following him. And so what he does is he just steps into a boat on the shore, and he starts teaching from the water. But this is what happens. In Luke chapter 5, he got into one of the boats, the one belonging to Simon, and asked him to put out a little from shore. Then he sat down and taught the people from the boat. So as he's walking along, he sees the boat. He just gets into the boat and says, "Hey, Simon, give me a push." He doesn't ask. He just gets in the boat. And that connection between he and Simon is instantly made. If you watch rom-coms, this is like a meet-cute in a rom-com. This is the moment where Simon and Jesus have their first encounter with one another. And so Jesus teaches, and then when he's done teaching, he wants to offer Simon some help. When he had finished speaking, he said to Simon, "Put out into deep water and let down the nets for a catch." Simon and his friends had been fishing all night and they had had no success, and Jesus knew it, and so now he's offering them some help. He's giving them some pointers to help them catch fish. But Simon and his friends don't know anything about Jesus. They don't know him at all, and so they're a little bit hesitant to follow his instructions, but when they do, they catch a boatload of fish, so many fish that their boat almost sinks. And so now they're like, "Who is this guy? This is amazing." And Jesus says, he said to Simon, "Don't be afraid. From now on, you will fish for people." In other words, come follow me and I'm going to show you a lot more cool stuff. And then they pulled their boats up on shore, left everything, and followed him. Jesus took this ordinary, everyday moment and turned it into an opportunity to initiate a connection, a relationship with Simon and his friends. That's what Jesus did. He initiated in ordinary, everyday moments with ordinary objects like a boat and use them as an opportunity to make a connection with someone, to have an initial conversation. Jesus did not sit on the temple steps or sit outside his home hoping that somebody would walk by and want to hang out with him. He went looking for people, and then he gave them clear instruction, clear invitation. "Come with me. Come follow me." In some cases, he said, "I'm coming over to your house today." He was an initiator. He made the first move. So if we want to find our circle, if we want to have deep, meaningful connection that we are designed for, then we could look to the model of Jesus and be initiators. We could be initiators. We can be the one to make the first move. Is it going to be awkward and a little bit uncomfortable? Probably. I want you to imagine for just a moment that you are on a playground or at a park with a bunch of kids, and there's one child standing over to the side by themselves, and everybody else is playing tag. What would you say to that child? I bet that you would say to them, hey, why don't you go over and ask them if you could play? Or you might say, hey, do you see that kid over there playing by themselves? Why don't you go see if they want to sit on the swings with you? We would encourage that child to be what? An initiator. We would encourage them to make the first step. But then, as adults, we don't apply the same principle to our own lives. What we do is we sit on the sidelines on our couch on Friday nights waiting for a text to be invited to dinner. And we can pretty easily convince ourselves that nobody wants to hang out with us. When the reality is, what we fail to realize is there's a lot of other people sitting at home waiting for a text to be invited to go do something. And we could be the one to be an initiator. So what? So what you barely know that couple? So what? If they're spending time with your kids, you should probably get to know them a little bit. Invite them to your house for dinner. So what that new person at the office is a lot younger than you are? They need someone to connect with them, to show them the ropes, to help them feel a part of the team. So what? There's not a community group that meets your exact phase of life. You could start a group. Being an initiator will feel awkward. It will feel uncomfortable sometimes. But what I am learning is that if we are not willing to step out and make a move, we will be void of friendships in our life. We will miss opportunities to make deep, meaningful connections if we are not willing to be an initiator, especially if you're a Christ follower. If Jesus is your model for living, then we've got to start being better at initiating connections with people and looking for those opportunities. I think sometimes we are stuck and we're lonely looking for our friends when what we should be doing is being the kind of friend we're looking for. And what that means is being an initiator, but it also means being available. Being available. How many of you will go to someone and say, hey, we really should get together sometime, but then you're never available to get together? Guilty. I've probably said it to some of you in this room, and I am sorry and thank you for your grace. But we do that, don't we? Jesus was never in a hurry. We never read a story in the gospel where he is running from one thing to the next, racing from one appointment to the next. Jesus' pace allowed him time with people. It allowed him to walk along the road with people, to sit on hillsides with people, to share meals with people, to spend time getting to know people. And we do the exact opposite. We ride alone in our cars to places and to work and to events, and we run to the grocery store, have food loaded in the back of our car, race home, put up the groceries, and sit on the couch by ourselves watching Netflix. And listen, I am a very busy person. We have 3 kids, Eric and I, and we are always doing something. And when we have a free night, I am perfectly happy to sit at home in my pajamas and not go anywhere on a Friday night. But if we always have a reason why we can't connect with someone, we will not have friends. What we have to do is to be available, and that means creating margin in our life to be able to connect with people, to spend time. It might mean rearranging our schedules a little bit so that when someone does ask us to do something, we can sometimes be available. If we are never available, they will assume that we're not looking for friendship, and they'll stop asking. So we have to be available. Friendship, deep, meaningful, real friendships take time. It does not happen in an instant. It takes time for those friendships to grow and to blossom. And so we have to make ourselves available for people. That said, you do not have to make yourself available for everyone. You do not have to give time to everyone. You know, something else about Jesus and the way that he modeled friendship is that he was selective in who he chose. He was around lots of people all the time. And he initiated relationships and connections with lots of different kinds of people. Everywhere he went, he had people around him, oftentimes people that would be least expected to be hanging out with a person like Jesus. But that was his mission. Then we see him getting away and spending intentional time with his group, his disciples, those 12 guys who he chose. They are the ones who he spent intentional time pouring into, teaching the most valuable things. And then within that 12, he had three guys, Simon, Peter, and John were his closest few. He trusted them the most, and he confided in them the most. He gave them exclusive invitations to see and observe and share things that he didn't share with everybody else. There was one time in Matthew where Jesus is going up on the mountain to have this encounter with God, and he invites those three guys up with him. And on the mountain, they see him transfigured into his divine form. He becomes this bright white light, and they witness him talking to Elijah and Moses, who were two spiritual giants from history. No one else got to experience that. Just a few. And when it was over, here's what Jesus said to those guys. As they were coming down the mountain, Jesus instructed them, "Don't tell anyone what you've seen until the Son of Man has been raised from the dead." Don't tell anyone what you've seen. He reserved that moment for a few guys who he trusted the most, who he confided in the most. And so if Jesus was selective with a few, then I think we also could and should be selective with a few. We, in order to develop deep, meaningful relationships and friendships in our lives, we need to be transparent and we need to be vulnerable with a few, not with everyone. That means that the whole office is not your few. Social media, not your few. The whole baseball team, not your few. Students, I would even say your whole tribe may not be your few. Your whole community group may not be your few. In reality, there are two, maybe three people who have the capacity and who can be trustworthy enough to know the good, the bad, the ugly, the really ugly in our life. We need those people who we can be truly transparent and fully vulnerable with, who know the deepest, darkest parts of our lives, and they love us anyways. Not only do they love us, but they help us grow through those deepest, darkest parts of our lives. The book of Proverbs tells us how to find those people, what that kind of relationship should look like in our life. The writer of Proverbs is a man named Solomon, and God gifted him with an incredible amount of wisdom, and he gives him this wisdom that he shares with us about friendships. He says, "As iron sharpens iron, so one person sharpens another." That pretty much sums it up right there. That means that our few, our closest few, those two or three people who we are the realest and the rawest with, are there to make our lives better. They are there to make us be the best version of ourselves that we can be, and we are there to do the same thing for them. That means, hear me on this, when they notice the junk and the mess in your life, they call you out on it. And it means not only do they call you out on it, but they help you figure out ways to grow through it. And then in return, you call them out on the mess and the junk in their life, and you help them figure out some ways to grow through it. That is iron sharpening iron. That is one friend helping another friend be the best version of themselves. That is deep, meaningful relationship that God has created you for, me for. And we need those people in our lives. We need people who are going to be completely vulnerable, completely transparent, but do not confuse that with authentic. You can be authentic with everybody. You can be exactly who you are with everybody. But I'm talking about the real vulnerable, the real transparent stuff that you wouldn't share with a room full of people or even with a group full of people, but just a selective few. There's very few people who will make the cut of that kind of person in your life. It's going to be somebody who's trustworthy. It's going to be somebody who's humble, somebody who's loving and kind, and who wants the best for you. So as you are initiating, as you are making connections and you're carving out time to spend with people, pray. Ask God to give you wisdom and discernment about who those few people might be, who those two or three people might be. It might be somebody that's already in your life right now. You just got to be a little bit more open to be vulnerable, to be transparent, to let down your walls. Because remember, we're created for connection. It is in the divine DNA of our souls that we are created to be in meaningful relationships where we are supporting, helping, loving, serving each other, but also just having fun, just laughing and eating and enjoying life together. Parents, how many of you have children that you just love to see them enjoying their friends? Isn't it so fun when you hear them just laughing and giggling with their friends and they're just having a ball? It brings us happiness and joy when we see that with our kids. And I am convinced that that is how our Heavenly Father feels about us. When he sees us enjoying meaningful, real connections with people, it makes him happy because it's how he's created us to go through life with people. So look for those people in your life. Look for those deep, meaningful relationships. It does not make you needy. You are not meant to do life alone. And while you are waiting, there's nothing wrong with being patient. There's nothing wrong with praying for friendship to come into your life. You should pray for that. But I just believe it takes a little bit more, that we've got to take some steps to get out of our comfort zone, to be initiators, to look for opportunities to connect with someone. It might be that we have to create some margin in our schedules to be able to do that, to spend real time with people, to invite them to a meal, to sit down and just talk for a while. In this book, one of the things that I love is she talks about having a fire pit at your house. It doesn't have to be fancy, but build a fire pit because friendships and real conversation happen around a fire pit. I love that. Isn't that true? Think about the last time you sat around a fire pit with some people. Didn't you have great conversation? Just creating that margin. We've got to take some steps to be initiators, to be available, but then also to just be wise and discerning about who we allow to be the closest to us, because we are created for that. And it does not have to be grand gestures. It can be as simple as using ordinary, everyday objects to connect with someone. Look at what Jesus did. He stepped into a boat. He needed a boat. He didn't go buy a boat. He borrowed a boat. What if the next time you're cooking and you run out of eggs, instead of rushing to the store, you just step a few feet across the yard to the neighbor's house and ask them to borrow eggs? They'll say, "What are you making?" And you'll say, "Meatballs." "That sounds amazing. I'll bring you some later. Or better yet, why don't you come join us for dinner?" What if we started doing that kind of stuff again as people? Don't you think we would find great ways to connect with people? I do. We have covered a lot of stuff this morning. Some of it's old information, some of it's new information. So I want to take you back to where we started and what this series is all about. Starting now, what I learn will change how I live. Are you willing to do that with what we learned today? I am. These things that we've just talked about, these three steps of finding our circle, being an initiator and being available and being selective with a few, these are the things that I'm working on in 2023. After I read this book, I told Eric, I said, "This is going to change the way we do this year. You better get ready." This is what I'm working on. Personally, I'm putting special emphasis on number two because this is where I struggle the most, is being available. Maybe for you, there's one or two of these on this list that you need to focus the most attention on. Maybe it's all of them. But don't just be complacent or give up on friendship, because God has created you for more than that. Do not waste what you're learning or give up before you've ever tried. It will require taking some steps, but I believe it'll be worth it. Even if you find one person to connect with that you're not currently in relationship with, it would be worth it, wouldn't it? You know, I'll speak on behalf of our whole staff when I tell you that we cannot handpick your 5 to 10 best friends for you. But what we can do is point you towards a few platforms where you could begin looking for those meaningful relationships. We believe you can find it right here. And we can help you queue up some of those relationships by encouraging you to sign up for a group. Today, when you walk out these doors, you might have already seen it when you came in, you can sign up to be a part of a community group, a women's group, a men's group, where you can make meaningful, lifelong connections with people who share your values, who will challenge you to get better, who will pray for you, who will support you. And some of you are thinking, well, I've tried community groups and it didn't work. Try again. Well, there's not a community group that fits my season of life. Start a group. I don't know how to start a group. We have strategies to help you with that. They don't have a group for me. Start a group. I don't have time for a group. Then you're missing out on an opportunity to make great connections with people. Be available. You can take a step right now to start putting into practice what you're learning today by doing that. Right here, right now, today, before you leave, sign up for a group. At least start initiating, start making yourself available. It is a new year, it is a fresh start, it is a new opportunity for God to show you what He has for your life. But that only happens if you take some steps first. So that's what I'm challenging you to do today. Let's pray together. Father, thank you so much for creating us for relationship, for creating us for connection. Thank you that you have divinely designed every one of us for relationship with other people and with you. And I pray that you would help us, give us the courage to take steps in finding our people, in finding our circle, because it's what you want for us. We don't want to miss out on one thing that you have. We don't want to miss one thing that you have planned for us. And so give us the courage to be initiators, to be available, to create margin, to spend time with people. And God, would you give us wisdom as we seek and find good friends, real friends for our lives. Thank you that we don't have to do life alone, but we have you and we have the support of other people. And so I just pray that every person in this room would not walk through life lonely, but that they would just find real, authentic relationship. It's in your Son's name that we pray. Amen.